The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome into the QB SCO show. This is episode 48, brought to you by the fine folk at SB Nation, Bleeding Green Nation. I am your host, Michael Kist. Follow me on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. And here with me always to break down quarterbacks around the league, and we've got some news to break here at BGN. It's quarterback one in our hearts, in our minds. He is Mark Schofield. Mark, before we get to you and the historical reference, we have some stuff to talk about.
We do.
Because there is Eagles news that the fan base is going to be celebrating. We are dancing on graves today as wide receiver coach Carson Walsh, famous for praising Mac Hollins because he assigns right, he aligns right in defense of giving Hollins an indefensible amount of snaps throughout the season. He has been let go, fired, canned from the Philadelphia Eagles. In other related news, the Cowboys have also let go of their wide receivers coach as part of their regime change. His name, that I'm probably butchering, is Sanjay Lal. He has the same agent as Doug Peterson and Howie Roseman. He interviewed with the Eagles back in 2017 before the job went to Mike Groh. So there's an opening at that spot. That's who I would first keep an eye on. Please keep in mind, we are recording at noon on Thursday, so this may age itself. But at the very least, we know that Walsh is gone. But there's more. We are popping bottles here at BGN headquarters because offensive coordinator Mike Groh has been thrown from the Tarpeian Rock. Stick a fork in him. He's like a Spartan baby, bathed in wine, deemed unworthy, abandoned him on the hillside. He is gone, is what I'm trying to say. So now the search for an offensive coordinator is on, and there may be more coaching staff shuffling as we continue on throughout the week and the day. Of course, keep checking bleedinggreennation.com for more updates, and we'll get you the news on this feed as well. My immediate thought is passing game coordinator and semi-quasi play caller at LSU, Joe Brady, for the offensive coordinator position in Philadelphia. He spent time with the Saints as he learned their passing game concepts there. There's also a yes for me on Jake Gruden, the former Washington coach. Pat Shurmur is a hell nah, nah, nah. And of course, Deuce Staley has a chance to be internally promoted. And I'm good with that as long as there is another hire from the outside that is brought in to supplement that move. Mark, I am just dancing on cloud.
You're giddy.
I'm very, very much so looking forward.
I think my favorite part of this entire, and again, it's now, you know, it's in the noontime hour here on Thursday, was your boy, our boy, your son, Benjamin Solak, who said something to the effect of on Twitter, you know, better people will not celebrate somebody losing their jobs. And he immediately responded to that with, I am not a good person. I.e., we're just going to, like you said, pop bottles, dance on graves, celebrate this one.
Yep.
It's big. It's big for the Eagles. And I know we're going to talk potential offensive coordinators in a second. I think that's a smart place to start. But I do want to talk about the receiving group because it's not that Pro Football Focus grades are the be-all and end-all. They're subjective. You take them with a grain of salt. But they get into the ballpark of where a team actually is, right?
Yeah.
PFF's grades for the receivers this year for the Philadelphia Eagles, 70.6, 20th in the league. Just a notch, a slim margin above New England's. And New England's receivers were a disaster zone. So that can tell you sort of the neighborhood where the Eagles' receiving group was this year. We can talk offensive coordinators now. I think you have to start with Joe Brady. Go Tigers.
Yeah.
But the problem is, Ogeron has already said he doesn't want to let him go.
Right.
You know, Brady said he doesn't want to leave. You know, so there's thoughts that he's probably going to get a big deal. I know Penn State was sort of sniffing around at Brady, perhaps.
There was a figure of like around $2
million. $2 million, yeah.
So that may entice Joe Brady to stay. They're obviously very interested, and Edo has talked about very interested in keeping Joe Brady for obvious reasons. I mean, that's why I want him in Philadelphia too, for the same reasons.
That's why everybody wants him right now. I mean, he can punch his ticket right now. I think Brady can. You look at Joe Burrow, a guy that, you know, a summer ago, 5 months ago, people were like, man, it'd be great for him if he gets a Shrine invite. You know, that would be fantastic. That's kind of the neighborhood Joe Burrow was as a quarterback this summer. And then it's gone to, well, you know, maybe Joe Burrow is going to get a Senior Bowl invite. Well, now it's like, does he even need to go? Like, and you look at how LSU has transformed their offense. This was a slug it out 22-21 personnel offense. Under Joe Brady, they're spreading you out. They're attacking you at every level of the field. It's innovative. It's creative. It's much better than we've seen some NFL offenses do. So there's a reason why people love Joe Brady. But I can't imagine he gets out of battery.
Yeah, and this is from Les Bowen, and I agree with him here. Les Bowen on Twitter saying, quote, if I'm the Eagles, the next offensive coordinator is going to be someone who has dynamic ideas, but who also really gets Check. Carson Wentz and what he's good at. Wentz and the OC need to be joined at the hip, unquote. Now, that's kind of why I'm against the Deuce Daly promotion, even though I love Deuce. But if he were promoted, I would want somebody with a quarterback mind to also be joining the organization from outside, because I think that new hire that works with Wentz needs to come from the outside as well. And I know, Mark, you wrote a piece about potential offensive coordinating hires recently. Who else do you have, or do you have any extra thoughts on that?
Right. I mean, this was for Big Blue View, because obviously, look, you hire a special teams coordinator, you have a young quarterback. That OC hire is going to be huge. I know there was the linkage of Jason Garrett to New York. Right. Conceptually, I could see where that might work. When Garrett was an OC, that offense was good. You know, he comes from the sort of Coryell school, a downfield approach that might sort of fit with where the Giants could go under Jones. I'm not so sure that fits with where the Eagles are and want to be. I don't think that style of play meshes with Doug Peterson, what he wants an offense to look like. So I'd put that to the side. Mm-hmm. I know you mentioned on Twitter, you mentioned it just now, Jay Gruden.
Yeah.
I'd be a fan of that.
Yeah.
Like, we've done a lot of shows now about Washington's offense, and while the quarterback play has been up and down, the concepts haven't been.
Right.
Look, Gruden's very quarterback friendly. When Kirk Cousins goes to bed at night, he sleeps on a pile of money that he can thank Jay Gruden for. I mean, the mirror passing concepts, the half field reads, the things that Gruden can do conceptually to help his quarterbacks out, I think Carson Wentz would benefit greatly from something like that. I'm going to scroll down through the list of names that I had to a name that I think should be interesting. That's John Kitna.
Who maybe
his way out of Dallas, because Mike McCarthy wants to put his own people in town. But Kitna did a great job with Dak Prescott.
Yes.
A really good job with Dak Prescott this season. If you see some of the coaching clinics where Kitna was talking about quarterback play and how he's also sort of reframed his mind and thinking about the position where, you know, when he was first thinking about playing quarterback, it was take the profit, take what the defense gives you, right? But now he's come to the terms with the idea that you need to be a bit more aggressive. You need to sometimes have appropriate aggression for the position. Who are we just saying has sort of appropriate aggression at the quarterback position? It's Carson Wentz himself. And so I think John Kitna is somebody that maybe it's not full on OC, but if I'm Doug Peterson, I want to get John Kitna in a room. If he's let go from Dallas, I think Kitna is really interesting to keep in mind. I know people have talked to Mike Kafka, currently the quarterback's coach in Kansas City. I think it's probably too early to turn an offense over to him, but maybe. You know, maybe you bring him back as quarterback's coach, maybe you prime away.
We also don't know if the Eagles are going to have an opening at the quarterback coach position, because we haven't heard if Press Taylor is going to stay or not. Right. Also an interesting thought with Kitna. That could be the promote Deuce, bring in Kitna, bring in those fresh ideas from the Dallas offense that was so good this year, and have him at Carson Wentz's hip. So I like that, not only as OC, but a potential hire for not a lateral move because he was fired, but basically doing the same thing he did in Dallas or Philadelphia.
Right. Some other names, Kevin O'Connell, who stepped into the offensive coordinator spot with Washington. I think he's an interesting name as well.
I like him.
You know, they moved in a different direction. They went with Turner. They brought him over from Carolina.
Who I like,
but
too.
Similar, yeah, who you like, too. But similar to Gruden, what we were just talking about. The concepts are there, the half-field reads, the ways to help the quarterback. Washington's offense was good conceptually, even this year. It just lacked consistency at the quarterback position. You know, I think that would be something to keep in mind. And a name I'll also throw out there, he's sort of been lingering in New Orleans for a while, Joe Lombardi. Look, learning under Sean Payton, learning under Pete Carmichael. You know, he does have experience as an offensive coordinator. That's at the collegiate level. He was an offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach for Mercyhurst University for four seasons. Look, he's also coached tight ends. He's coached D-line. He's coached O-line. He's done some strength and conditioning stuff. He's a versatile, you know, well-knowledged guy. The Lombardi name, you know, it's interesting to keep that in mind. But he's somebody that I'd want to talk to as well, maybe as a quarterbacks coach hire. And Chad O'Shea is the last name I'll throw out there. I know people, you're going to hire somebody that was fired by the Dolphins. He was working with next to nothing talent-wise. And that Dolphins offense was pretty good down the stretch. Yeah. You saw what they did to New England in Week 17.
Saw what they did to the Eagles, yeah.
Yeah. And let's talk about this. New England was so bad in the red zone this year. So bad down near the goal line. We saw it on Saturday night. First and goal at the one. They couldn't get it in. Chad O'Shea, a season ago, was their sort of end red zone offensive coordinator. He was the person in charge of sort of scripting that stuff, coming up with red zone ideas. You saw what it meant to New England when they didn't have him. I'd at least bring him in for an interview.
Yeah, so that's a great list of names that we just put out there. Good stuff, Mark. And I've got more stuff from Doug Peterson. It was weird the way the timing of this worked because Doug Peterson eventually apologized for this, for the weird messaging regarding the future of the staff in the end of your press conferences that you can listen to at the podium. And we also discussed on the KNS 169, basically saying they'd done a great job and everything like that. And the timing of it was weird because that press conference happened. And then after the fact, he had met with Jeffrey Lurie. This is from Jeff McClain. Quote, Doug Peterson had yet to meet with owner Jeffrey Lurie when he gave Groh and Welch a vote of confidence. He did today. Lurie had pretty much decided by December that he didn't want either back, an NFL source said, unquote. And I'll tell you, Lurie wasn't the only one. Also, Peterson on Groh and Welch, this is new. Quote, they were a big part of our success down the stretch this past season. This is one of the most difficult parts of the job and something that weighs on me. But ultimately, I have to make decisions that I believe are in the best interest of the team, unquote. And me and Benjamin Solek were kind of talking about this because we were wondering if the Eagles were going to be more run it back or more remodel. That was the episode title of the show, because you could certainly make a case. And Mike Groh is not loved around here. Obviously, you could tell from the top of the show and our comments on him throughout the season. But you could make the case that over the past 6 weeks, you can include the Miami game too, where they scored over 30 points. And even the Seattle game where they scored 9 points. But I thought they had a great game plan coming in. They had to scrap a lot of the motion stuff with McCown in there and whatnot. I thought the ideas were great. So for 6 weeks, I thought the offense was schemed up right. After having some mid-season struggles where we really hated what they were doing schematically, it was a horizontal-only offense. Mark, do you agree that things looked a lot better from an offensive standpoint with what they were trying to do and what they were able to accomplish in the last part of the season?
Yeah, things certainly got better. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago, how if you go back to that first Seattle meeting, that was the, 27 slant flat game? You know, it was a boring offense. It got better down the stretch with diminished talent at the wide receiver room. And I think, you could say that this was warranted, this move was warranted, but it doesn't diminish the fact that, Groh and company sort of did their jobs down the stretch. This team needed to win games to get into the playoffs. This team needed to score points to win those games to get into the playoffs. And they did that, even in games they lost. The game planning was better. The route designs and concepts were much improved. They were more creative. They put stress on the defense at multiple levels of the field. So he can be commended for that while still being shoved out the door. Like, we could do both.
Yeah. It's the NFL. It is a brutal business.
It is.
Not many coaching changes end with nonviolence. You're either fired or you quit or, expiring contracts or whatever. But yeah, that's what we got going down here at BGN. We'll be covering this thing from bell to bell. If any news drops, of course, we'll have you here at BGN and we'll have you at bleedinggreennation.com. Mark, when we come back, I actually want to ask you about Joe Judge, the new head coach of the New York Giants. You have experience with him being a Dirty Pats fan and everything like that.
Filthy.
So we're going to try to get some more information on him. Of course, I'll be checking the timeline like a madman as we record to make sure we don't miss anything for you, gentle listener. But we'll be back with more of the QB Sco show right after this.
What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward Travel Guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
And we are back here on the QB Sco Show, episode 48, SB Nation, Bleeding Green Nation. Michael Kist here with Mark Schofield. Mark, before the break, I kind of teased the fact that we were going to talk about the new hire for the New York Giants. He's been the special teams coordinator for the Patriots. He's worked under Saban. He was part of he was the wide receivers coach, which was the worst unit on the Patriots, as you kind of talked about before, for 1 year. So the Giants bring in Judge Joe Judge, if you want to call him that. Got his own.
My name is Judge.
TV show. I saw that meme. That was funny from Ruiz. So, yeah. What can you tell us? You know, us Eagles fans are wondering, what the heck? Who is this guy? Where did he come from? Is he a real person? All of those things. What do you know about Joe Judge?
Well, he is a real person. We can start there. Joe Judge is an actual 38-year-old human being who, you know, breathes oxygen and expels carbon dioxide. He is a human being. What's interesting about this hire, and I've sort of heard, you know, from people in and around the organization, the Patriots organization, yes, as a dirty Patriots fan, that Belichick really thought the world of this guy. And, you know, it's important to sort of put into the context that Belichick does stress the importance of all three phases, special teams, offense, defense. And we saw the success of the Patriots special teams units over the past couple of seasons, in particular this year. You know, there's a reason why they went 12-4 with such a bad offense. It's because of their defense and special teams. They were able to win field position battles. They were able to obviously generate points and turnovers in the special teams phase of the game. You look at Super Bowl 53, that was a field position battle, and they hung with Johnny Hecker, one of the best punters in the game from the Rams. So, you know, Judge does a great job. He's extremely detail-oriented. You talk to anybody about him, Bill Belichick himself has said that he's an extremely detail-oriented person. And that's critical on special teams because you're dealing with people from offensive and defensive sides of the ball. There's so many different moving parts. I mean, you think about the flow of a game. You have a guy get dinged in the secondary, and you got to realize, okay, he's our L3 on the kickoff team. He's our, you know, personal protector on the punt team. He's like part of what we're doing. You have to make sure you've got guys in ready to go to step into that spot. And then suddenly your backup tight end gets dinged, and oh, he's the wind guy on your PAT team and field goal team. Like, so you have to know everybody and what they're doing. So there's a lot of detail oriented stuff that goes into that. Judge is tremendous in that area as well. Another thing to remember, Belichick basically took him under his wing. Yeah. He was grooming him to become a head coach, grooming him to become the head of an organization. They would talk about roster build and an organizational philosophy and things like that all the time. So Belichick sort of knew that at some point he was going to be a head coach. The last thing I'll sort of point out is this. A lot of people from Bill Simmons on down basically dinged this hire, saying, oh, you're hiring the Patriots wide receivers coach. That group was awful this year. Is a wide receivers coach sort of entitled only? Like when Shadow Shade left with Brian Flores, rather than hiring one, they just said, hey, Joe, could you do this too? You know, guy has no offensive background whatsoever. Right. He's a linebackers coach, defensive line coach, special teams coach. Like, he's not somebody that's ever coached wide receivers. He probably doesn't know where they line up to begin with. I mean, so, you know, and Nick Cassero, their personal player personnel guy, you know, Andrew Hawkins even pointed on Twitter that a lot of times he was doing wide receiver coaching because that's kind of his background. Mm-hmm. And so don't hang the failures of the Patriots wide receiver room around Joe Judge's neck. Yes, he was their coach, but that was sort of a title and something he took on perhaps to learn that side of the ball a bit more to get him in position for something like this.
There's a few tweets that kind of relate to this that I really like. Number one is from Andrew Hawkins. He says, unpopular opinion, special teams coordinator is better practical training for a head coaching role than defensive coordinator or offensive coordinator. Debate your mother, unquote.
Right.
And then Chris Long basically agreed with him. He says, also, you have to be a great motivator because those dudes are running down on kickoffs. They're nuts. I thought that defensive coordinators might be my easy number one on the motivator index, but I've also had some great special teams coaches. OCs are third when it comes to that. And another thing that Chris Long said that I really liked, he said, quote, you don't need motivation on game day. You need to understand when to be the good guy slash bad guy, when to cut slack, when to press the gas pedal, and how to pull guys through those lulls and letdowns. The motivation thing is misunderstood for coaches, unquote, which I like, you know, that the context of the special team coach for Judge, and also some context too for the Eagles, like what makes Doug Peterson such a great motivator to where teams can buy into his message, as the Eagles have when the chips have been down over the past few years. So there's some really good context from a guy who's been in that locker room with a guy like Doug Peterson, with a guy like Bill Belichick.
Yeah. And another thing to remember is Saturday night against the Titans, you saw Stephon Gilmore out there on special teams.
Right.
Like, you saw star players on that Patriots roster on the special teams units, which means he's now replacing guys and moving guys around because of the importance of that phase of the game and because of the importance of that moment. So it's one thing to motivate a guy that's a fringe player to say, look, you want to stick in this league, you want to stick on this roster, run down and bust a wedge for me. Mm. It's another thing to grab Stephon Gilmore and say, look, you're up for defensive player of the year. Now go cover a punt.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what he's used to doing, but that's what you need to be able to do as a special teams coach. And, you know, you apply that to the entire team at large, the entire locker room. I think it makes a ton of sense. And of course, look, special teams coaches don't have a long and lengthy history of getting shots as head coaches.
Right. John Harbaugh, but there's
a guy coaching this weekend that's done it and he's hoisted a Lombardi. And so there's an argument to be made that, look, it could work. Now, he's going to have to make some good hires around him.
Right.
You know, he needs an OC and he needs a DC. And like you sort of said, in terms of the Eagles and their offensive coordinator gig, you might want somebody with some head coaching experience. That's why a Jay Gruden might make sense. It's a Jason Garrett might make sense.
Right.
You look at Wade Phillips. If they could hire Wade Phillips as DC, I think that makes a ton of sense for them. Although he might be going the Brett Bielema route or something like that. But if it's Brett Bielema and Freddie Kitchens, as we're suddenly hearing rumblings about, they want to talk to Kitchens about an offensive gig. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
But if they could put together like a Garrett, a Phillips under him, that would work.
I think. I think experience at those coordinating positions is going to be huge for him. And I like the idea of Wade. I love Wade, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously, you know, defensive coordinator is the talk of the town, too, because Jim Schwartz has a, you know, head coaching interview with the Browns. So he could possibly out of the way. So the Eagles might be looking for something, you know, in that position as well. So it's good to talk about. One thing that I wanted to talk about, not just with the Giants, but with the Eagles as well, because there's multiple offensive coordinator positions now open around the league. One name that we haven't talked about yet, and I'm interested to get your opinion on him because it's been a guy that I've liked in the past and has had some weird relationships with his coaches, is Todd Monken, who is with the Bucks and then had play calling responsibilities. They were on fire, you know, the year before back in 2018, and then things kind of got weird, and then he got the rug pulled out from under him by Dirk Cutter, who is just a bum in my opinion, and the offense saw some regression. And then he goes to Cleveland and things don't work out there, but Kitchens is basically, you know, using abusing the game plan, you know, the stuff that they installed during the week. Monken was saying that he totally flipped the script when it came to game day, so there was a fractured relationship there. I'm wondering your thoughts on Monken, who I like, but I don't know, because this has gone wrong for him twice now. Is it the head coaches? Is he bad at interpersonal relationships and in that front office dynamic? Like, what do you think of him?
Yeah, I'm a fan of his. You know, I think when you study him sort of conceptually, there's a lot that he does in stressing the defense, you know, near the line of scrimmage. He works in the ability to stress the defense downfield. You know, obviously there's a lot of spread elements, some air raid stuff mixed in there. So I'm a fan of what he's done. I think with him, it might be sort of the personal relationship aspect to it and the way it's gone wrong, like you said, two different times. Now, this most recent incident, it was probably more a Freddie Kitchens issue than a Monken issue. I think the Kitchens, for everything that he did right at the end of last year with Baker Mayfield going 4 and 5 wide, really catering to what Baker wanted to be as a quarterback, that almost went to his head, I think.
Yeah.
You know, he sort of tried to rein in power. We see this sometimes with, you know, younger coaches that become head coaches for the first time. They feel like they have to assert themselves. It's almost like an alpha male, alpha dog kind of thing. We saw it with Josh McDaniels basically running Jay Cutler out of town and how that situation ended up. So Kitchens was probably doing the same thing, and it just came to loggerheads with Monken. Monken's an interesting name, you know, and I think that could certainly work. A name that I don't even know what the guy's doing right now, interestingly enough. Jeremy Bates.
Mm.
Remember the season that Josh McCown had under Bates in New York like 2 years ago?
That was incredible. It was
would like run an air raid stuff. Josh McCown had the career year.
Yeah.
And it was like, man, this offense is great. All of football Twitter, all of scheme Twitter just loved what they were doing.
Yep.
It was like air raid stuff. It was West Coast stuff. It was really innovative. And then they fired him.
Yep. And there was a falling out. There was a weird situation there. And
it was because apparently he didn't want to run the ball. He didn't want to run the ball with guys like Bilal Powell and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So they're like, no, this is not going to work. I'm on his Wikipedia page right now. Is he alive? Like, the last note on his Wikipedia page was, on January 24, 2019, the Jets replaced Bates with Dowell Longins. And that's it.
Wow. That's a really interesting name, because you're right. That 2017 season.
That 2017 season was fantastic.
Magical. The best of Josh McCown's career.
It was 2018, but yeah.
Yeah. And look, I mean, Josh McCown can – he has an input. He could be like, hey.
Is there a way you could go Bates as OC, McCown as QB coach?
I love that.
Josh McCown be the quarterback's coach next year? Do you think he would do that?
I think he would. I think he wants to be a coach. You know, he's a high school coach and everything like that. Yeah. And they pull him out of retirement, and he was doing like media stuff as well. But I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. He was basically like a coach before Carson Wentz, a life coach, and then an actual X's and O's coach.
And he was doing that with Mark Sanchez. I mean, not Mark Sanchez. That's a Freudian slip. Sam Darnold a year ago.
Jameis Winston as well. Didn't pay off with Jameis, obviously. But
obviously.
McCown had a big voice in that room, was an integral part of that team, and also helped Carson Wentz, the leadership aspect, the maturity aspect, and then also working with the practice squad guys as well, like Greg Ward. You know, he pounded the table with Deontay Burnett, from what we found out. So he has a voice, and what he's said and what he's done has been admirable here in Philadelphia, and he's a name that I would absolutely love to replace Press Taylor at quarterback's coach. I mean, there is not a person on this planet, not a player that has played with him that has ever had a bad word to say about Josh McCown.
Has anybody ever said anything negative about that guy?
He's the most likable guy.
Look, you look at what he's done over his career. You see him at the podium, obviously, after that playoff loss and what it meant to him just to be in a playoff game in that atmosphere. But, you know, my mind always flashes back to him catching passes against the Patriots, you know, when he lied about wide receiver because they were dinged and they needed depth at wide receiver. The guy, look, he wants to win. I'd be curious about if he'd be willing, because he went into the media. I know he wants to get into coaching, but, you know, the family is still, in Carolina, North Carolina,
I think? Yeah.
So the travel thing, he was like living and then flying home to coach and see his son play and go back and forth. You know, would he be willing to stay in Philly? I don't know. But I'm talking myself into the idea of him at quarterback's coach and then maybe Bates or somebody else as OC.
You know what's crazy is? He is 9 years older than Press Taylor. There's been a lot of chatter around Philadelphia, like, is Press Taylor the right guy for Carson? Is he? Because John DeFilippo was pretty hard on Wentz and really pushed him. I don't know. And the question surrounding Press Taylor is he old enough? Is he mature enough to kind of be that guy that Carson Wentz will like take that hard coaching from? I think Josh McCown and him mesh so well. I mean, McCown meshes with everybody, but I think McCown, being an older guy that's done it in the league, would garner a lot more respect from a guy like Carson Wentz, and it would have his ear more. It could be harsher on him, and it could be, you know, press him a little bit more. You
know, right. Pun intended.
Pun intended, yeah.
Yeah, so, and look, some quarterbacks need that. Yeah. Like, you have to hit quarterbacks. We're fragile little snowflakes. Like, you have to handle them differently. Some need to be pressed a little bit more. Wentz seems to be that kind of guy that, you know, you've got to drive him a bit. You've got to push him a bit. You can be hard on him because he can take it. Josh McCown can do that because it comes from a position of, not only have I done this, dude, I was in the game for you last year.
Right.
Like, I've been there.
Yep.
Like, trust me on this one.
So, interesting thoughts. We were supposed to come in today and talk about the different playoff quarterbacks and matchups.
Look, I had 10 minutes to go on the Battle of Cannae, okay? I was going to go deep on the Battle of Cannae because we thought we'd have nothing to talk about.
Right.
And instead, we skipped over historical reference.
I mean, I've got a whole thing about Hannibal's Dream and everything like that. Yeah. We're going to have to get to that on the next QB's Go show, but I think that's going to do it for today. Mark, any closing thoughts before we get out of here?
Look, it was a tough weekend for both of us, obviously. I did think at some point late Saturday afternoon, Sunday morning, Sunday evening, even into Monday, that I would just be here with a bottle of Tito's and a shot glass, and we would just go shot for shot. But life moves on. We turn the page. We wonder if Tom Brady's going to be a Chicago Bear. We wonder if Carson Wentz is injury prone. No, he's not, you chuckleheads. He's not. But we go on. We forge on, as we do at the QB Scope Show.
That's right. Hit the music. That was perfect.
Hit the music.
BGN.